So where I grew up, there were a whole maze of trails behind my house, and there was one tree that I would always go to and sit with. I went to that tree for so long, but then I got busy with work, and then one day I made time and I went up, and as I was walking up to that tree, I just started crying because I missed that tree and the space that piece of land in that tree held for me, and I could just do anything and say anything. And it was so grounding and refreshing and cleansing. Now I live in a busier city that doesn't have a whole maze of trails, and it's all very manicured parks. I don't have a space for that anymore, but I'm starting to find spaces like that in Stanley Park when I do my tours, like with the Huckleberries. So I would like to find a place to live with a really nice tree nearby where I can make really good friends with it and have that space to just let go and refresh.
Down to you.
Down to us.
It's down to all of us, together. The generations alive today will determine the climate and humanity's future.
This is Down to You Podcast.
The Down to You Podcast team acknowledges that our work spans many unceded territories and treaty areas. We recognize and honor that we are facilitating stories on lands stewarded by Indigenous nations since time immemorial. We are grateful for the traditional knowledge sharers, storytellers, and elders that are with us today, those who have come before us, and the youth that inspire us. And hello, welcome back to the Down to You podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Hollis.
And I'm the other one, Alex. Thanks for tuning in. As always, we're bringing you conversations from youth about climate. Today, we're joined by Shailen Trottier, speaking to us about tourism.
Yeah, she's working with Talese Tours, which is a tour group in Vancouver, but they also offer tours up the Salish coast. And what we enjoyed listening to Shailen about was her connection to land and water from an Indigenous perspective.
Mm-hmm. We all like to go on trips, and today we'd like to have the conversation about how to pursue more meaningful and sustainable tourism.
I remember as a younger person, I traveled in Asia specifically, but it seemed to me that sometimes when people are on vacation, it's easy to just not care about your trash or your waste or just like not have as much respect. So yeah, it's nice to bring you a story of an option for being a bit more thoughtful about tourism and how we engage with the land that we are guests on.
Let's get into it.
Yeah, let's hear from Shay.
My name is Shay. I am Tlaiqui First Nations. So Tlaiqui First Nation is where Tofino is today. I was not fortunate enough to grow up in my community or in my culture, and I didn't know where to go or who to ask to learn. And it was something that I always felt was missing, learning about that part of my family. I am mixed settler and Indigenous, and I grew up in my settler family. I went over just a couple months ago for the first time in 15 years, and it was extremely beautiful, very emotional. I did not want to come back, but I am very happy to be back. I still have work to do here with Talese Tours, and it's through Talese Tours and through Candace, the owner, who invited me in to learn with Squamish Nation and with Sechelt Nation, that I know everything that I know today. My greatest teachers have been Kwige'ewans. She is Haida and Squamish, Seraphine Lewis. And her mother, Kakalaith, she is Squamish, Deanna Lewis. They are my two greatest inspirations. A lot of families were quite scared to share their language and their knowledge after going through residential schools, and it stopped a lot of knowledge from being passed on. But Deanna put in that hard work, and she learned all that she could from her grandpa, and now her children get to grow up knowing all that they know. They get to grow up being Indigenous. So that's, for me, inspirational. I'm doing the hard work now. I have two young nephews. I want them to always have access. I want children in the future. I want them to have access and to know who we are and where we come from. Sarah, or Kwige'ewans, her family's knowledge keeper now, and she was raised and being taught that since she was very young, without her even knowing. And to watch her today speak to people and share what she knows, it's very beautiful. It's very inspirational. And I want to be that for my family. And all of this has been made accessible. All of these opportunities and the people I meet has been through Talese Tours and through the owner, Candice Campo. And I'm extremely grateful for that and to be where I am today.
I loved the way she spoke about her mentors, Candice and Seraphine Lewis. She just gave them so much credit. It was so humble, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. Like, she was just so generous with her words about those people. And she also struck me as someone that is really open, like open to learning. It shows that she's kind of on this really beautiful journey of development or evolution within herself and has gotten a lot of great opportunities because of that.
Yeah, she shares a lot of cool wisdom in this interview. One piece that I enjoyed is her talking about how some of the traditional wisdom is being kept alive through her mentors. There was a huge gap during the residential schools when a lot of this wisdom kind of got suppressed and lost and silenced. And it was really inspiring to hear that there's a revival over time and that it's being brought back and because of people like Shay who are doing the work and sharing this knowledge with others.
Candice has been doing tours for at least 22 years. She started on the Sunshine Coast, where her nation is, where she's from, doing kayak tours. And she started doing walking tours, I believe, about 7 years ago here on the mainland in primarily Stanley Park. But we sort of do them all over. We're kind of flexible with the customization of location. Candice is hoping to relaunch the kayak program, but we need to train people for that. Safety, knowing the routes, knowing how to contact someone if you need help, all of that. She took us kayaking in May, and it was my first paddling experience, and it changed my life. I want to keep doing that, and I want to paddle more, and hopefully one day paddle a canoe. We share our traditional knowledge of the land. So we share primarily Squamish culture and history. Most of the team is Squamish. I've been taught primarily Squamish, so what I share is Squamish culture and history. We have basically like a learning community within this company. I'll say like sometimes we do go out intentionally to look at things, but on the kayak trip that we went on, we went up the inlet, but I would just walk along with Candice, the owner, and one of our teachers, Richard Till, and he would just start unloading all of this information about where we are. And we're in a different place, like in the inlet. We were in an intertidal zone, a place that we don't have a lot of around Vancouver anymore, especially in Stanley Park, where we do a lot of our tours. That intertidal zone in Stanley Park has been completely removed by the seawall. That is usually a very unique environment for special plants to grow in, and it's been completely removed. So when we went up the inlet and we had that opportunity, there was just a few of us from the group that started to walk along and listen to him share all of that. And anytime I get to slow down and spend that time with them, go on a slow walk, and we stop every few feet because there's a new plant to look at. Like, I love that. I appreciate that. And it's been one of the biggest forms that I've been learning in. I've always been into plants, mostly house plants, but then working with this company, it's been outdoor native plants. And I, before, had a lot of books about native plants, but it's just a little picture with one angle of the plant. Like, I can't identify it from that. When we go out and walk, we're seeing where it's growing. Like, I can see the whole plant. I can see how much sun it's getting. If it's like a drier area or a more damp area, like, I can actually see the environment it's in. And that's through going on walks, like outside. You get to see that plant in its environment. We have basically like a learning community within this company. We also work with a medicine elder from the Leetwat Nation sometimes. She has a wealth of knowledge. And going back to Candice, she's a really great woman. She highly prioritizes learning and studying together and providing those opportunities.
It's cool to think of some of these tourist opportunities that are right in our backyard and might allow some people to explore the land in a new way for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what better way to learn about that land than the first peoples It's a great way to support reconciliation, I think, especially economic reconciliation. It's important to be able to provide opportunities for Indigenous folks to share their knowledge and to pass their knowledge along to each other. I find too, like how Shay talks about her mentors and how inspiring they've been for her, and they've really connected her with her culture. Like, I think that's super important. Not only is she getting to learn about and share about her culture and her history, she's also getting financially compensated, and, you know, she's not just working a day job somewhere. It's like meaningful for her. I think a company like Talese is such a good opportunity for just like an individual person like you or me, just like, you know, to go and financially support that.
Mm-hmm. It's also a good facet of reclaiming the land by deferring to the original peoples here for the knowledge on it and the peoples whose land it is. And I know we do land acknowledgements and stuff, but this is kind of a tangible example of
Honoring that or acknowledging that or something.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a step in the right direction. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. A small step, but a step that I think an average person can take, you know?
And it's kind of like a meaningful land acknowledgement, because by doing that, you're acknowledging that this is whose land it is. Let's learn something from these people and defer to them about land issues and knowledge.
Every tour I give, it will always be a little bit different based on the people, what they ask, what they seem interested in. So something that I do talk about is how the current extractive system focused purely on profit, it's not sustainable. And it's very opposite of how we've been doing things here for thousands of years. A lot of the focus in colonialism, in capitalism, is just resource extraction. Like, you're not stopping to look at the birds, you're not stopping to look at the plants. You're just thinking, like, generally, how can I make money out of what I'm looking at? But there's so much more to it than that. Like, there is food, there is medicine. Even there's so many flowers. I'll ask my teachers, like, oh, what is this flower for? Like, this is beautiful. And they said, oh, it's just pretty to look at. Like, it's not food or medicine. It's just beautiful. You just look at it and appreciate it. We were always focused on sustainability, always thinking 7 generations in the future. We want all of our children to have the same quality of life, abundance of resources, the same health and wealth. And I also talk about our idea of wealth pre-contact, pre-colonialism, was giving. All up and down the coast here on the West Coast, we have our own forms of potlatch. Potlatch, the word itself, comes from a Nuchanoth word, where my family is from, that's our language group. Comes from the Nuchanoth word pachidol, which means to gift. So at the heart of potlatching, it is a gifting economy. It is resource distribution. It's the wealthier you were, the more you could give away, whether it be food or practical items like clothing, hunting and fishing tools, even canoes. You were always taking care of those around you, and the more you could give away, the wealthier you were. So it's very opposite of the system that we live in today. And that's something that I enjoy to talk about because I think that it was obviously way more sustainable. Like, we were always giving to each other. We're not trying to compete to take as much as we can. And even our harvesting practices are very sustainable as well. And keeping in mind that balance with the natural cycle and with nature and the world and the earth. If we had a berry bush full of berries, we would only take 1/3 of the berries from that bush. And that's something that I've heard we've learned from the animals. And it's something that you can still witness them doing today, is that the birds and the squirrels will only take 1/3 of those berries. We take 1/3 of those berries. And now there's a 1/3 remaining that no one will touch. And that's not only out of respect for that plant, but it's to give back to that plant. And those berries will fall back into the earth and feed that plant, and it's going to continue that cycle, not only for us, but for the other animals and for that plant species as well. On my tours, my favorite spot is, there's this huge like group, this little grove of like huckleberries. They are my favorite berries. Like, they are tart, they are sour, they're super cute as well. Like, they're tiny, tiny red berries. And I like to stop with them because they offer good teachings and perspective at the very start of my tour. That's where I'll start. And I'll share the berry thing about only taking one third in that sustainable way of harvesting. But I'll also use huckleberries as a spot to stop and share how long these plants take to be here. Huckleberries in particular, they take 10 years to get 1 foot of growth. They're extremely slow growing plants. And I like to use that as a spot to show these plants, maybe they're only 8 feet tall or 9 feet tall, but they've been here for 80 years, 90 years. I've seen some in the park that have been there for 150 years. They're these huge huckleberry plants. And when they reach these ages, we start to call them grandmother huckleberries, not only because of how long they've been there, but that is how we view the land and the plants. We view them as our relatives. And we want to offer these plants the same respect that we offer our relatives. When we harm that plant, we're harming the plants around it. We're harming that land. We're harming ourselves and our future children as well. It's all connected in that way. And I think huckleberries are a really great teaching for that. If we can help educate people on what's around us, they are going to have a different perspective. They're going to have more respect for what's around them and understanding of these plants that are there. So when we do our tours, a big part of our goal is to let people know about the plants around them, to show them where the food and the medicine is. And it kind of gives people a new perspective. If they have a park that they always walk in, or if they have plants in their backyard that they don't know what they are. And I always tell people at the end of the tour, like, I hope you learned at least one thing, if not a few things. And I hope that you go and share that with your friends and family, because the more the people that know, I think the better they'll have that better understanding and respect for where we are.
This has come up a bit before for us, this kind of idea that connecting with the land and connecting with nature is a way for folks to nurture their desire to protect the land. So it can kind of go hand in hand with like furthering the dial on climate action.
100%, yeah. And then it's cool to learn about the food and medicine available to us in our backyards. Some of these plants that many people don't know what they could be used for. And then some of them, she says, she's told, oh, it's just to be pretty. It's just for us to enjoy looking at. Yeah, I thought I really enjoyed that part. And also to kind of shift away from that idea of, well, what can we use this for? Like, what can I take this and do with it? But maybe not everything's like that.
Definitely. I noticed that as well. And something I thought about, because for myself too, I'm like questioning that, like, oh, what's this for? Like just beauty, or like, is beauty a purpose in and of itself? And then realizing that is like maybe a difference between like the colonial mindset and the indigenous perspective.
Yeah. The thing I'm taking away most is this idea of, okay, if we are taking things from nature, and Shay says that we learn this from the animals, this idea of not taking the whole bush of berries. If we come across a blueberry bush, we take a third and we leave some. I'm not sure why, but that just seems to make so much sense, and to just kind of not be the normal kind of Western way of looking at resources.
And I like what she shared about like a pre-colonial idea of wealth is the potlatch.
Mm-hmm. Their measure of wealth was how much you could give.
Yeah.
So cool.
Not like how much you have.
And it just feels so like happy, the idea of your wealth is like how much you can give, how much you can like provide to other people, and how much you can uplift other people. Just feels better. You know, it feels better.
And it just makes me think like you're just more connected then, and like you're taking care of each other too, because when hard times fall on one or the other, there's always another one there to lift you up. You know, I don't know.
So the climate, it's definitely changing, and being out on the land all year round, we see the effects of it. We see it affecting the plants around us. We see it affecting the animals around us too. Even like a lot of the trees in Stanley Park, where we do a lot of our tours, they are very sad looking. They're very dry. They almost have no needles. And these are supposed to be evergreen coniferous trees that are supposed to just have their needles all year round. They have no needles except on the very end where they're trying to recover. Last year, we had a really late warm season. It was hot until almost November. And we have our Pacific salmon, who are a keystone species. They're essential for the health, the stability, the balance of the whole ecosystem around them. We saw them struggling to get up the rivers. We had delayed rain. We had lack of rain. So our rivers aren't full enough for them to get up. And it was too warm. When the salmon are going up the river and it's too warm, they use up way more energy than they would in that cold water. And that's really scary because we need them to get back up the river. We need them to spawn and keep that cycle going because they are a keystone species and they're so essential to everything that we see and everything that we enjoy. I usually talk about it if people ask. I don't always bring up climate crisis. We get such a variety of people coming on the tours. I know that sometimes when I get onto certain topics, especially with our history tour, it can become very heavy. And unless people are asking in a way that I think that they would be okay with having those heavy conversations, I usually won't go into it. But people do ask, and I do talk about it when we're walking through our tours. Yeah, I will say for quite a few years, I thought that I would never want to have children because I had a lack of hope in the climate and a separate thing in the economy, but primarily about the climate. I'm scared that if I had children, they wouldn't have water, they wouldn't have food, they wouldn't have these basic things that keep us safe, healthy, and happy. But over the past year or two, I've really shifted my perspective on that. And I really do think there is hope. And if I was able to have a child or have two children and share that hope with them, that with them growing up, show them that they can be a part of the positive change. Like, I think that if we were all scared to have children because of the climate crisis, then there would be no one there to fight against it and to fight for it and to try and save what's around us and provide that future for other people, other children.
Yeah, and I guess if the sharing of the land is facilitating a connection to the land, then just getting more people to care about the land could help us as a collective reduce emissions because people are, you know, light bulbs are going off in our heads about like how important it is to protect.
Totally. Yeah.
And I really appreciate that she reads the tour group and it's up to the questions they're asking if she feels like they're open to going a bit deeper or not. You know, some people aren't ready to hear about climate change or don't want to talk about it. For better or for worse, for right or for wrong, it's not for me to say, but like maybe they just want to have a nice time and look at the plants. And yeah, I just appreciate that she's kind of aware of that.
Yeah. And maybe just touching back on the earlier point of how if you spend time outside in certain settings regularly through the years, you will actually probably see some effects. If you've done it through years, you'll see maybe things becoming drier or like Shay says, the salmon run's getting a little thinner. Or if you play hockey outside, maybe the season's getting shorter as the years go on. And things like this are more kind of like direct evidence.
Yeah, that tangible.
You can see. Yeah.
Yeah, impacts that are more meaningful, I think, than like a news story.
Mm-hmm.
News stories can feel, there can be a disconnect there. It's mm-hmm. just accessing your cerebral.
It's kind of one step removed.
Understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've definitely seen an increase. Usually there's a quiet season, especially for the tours that we do, because we're looking at the plants and the trees. But this past season, there was almost no off time. Like people just kept booking, people want to learn. And it's not only people visiting Canada and Vancouver, it's people who have grown up here their whole lives. And they want to learn not only about the plants that are around them, but they want to hear the stories directly from Indigenous people and the local Indigenous people and what's happened here. And just hear those stories from a different perspective. I know curriculum in schools has changed. Like now it's mandatory to have a First Nations course to graduate. But when I was in school, like that wasn't mandatory. I think one of my teachers one year spent about a week on Indigenous studies. So to see people take an interest in that, not only the Indigenous people, but the plants around them and how those plants are being affected, I really appreciate that. When the people come here and visit Vancouver, and one of the things they choose to do is to spend time with us and walk through the park with us and just slow down and learn about the plants, about the people here, I really appreciate that, and I find beauty in that. Candace started doing virtual tours through Zoom, during COVID. I wasn't working here at that time, but it was so she could still provide work for her guides. She's very committed to the people that she employs and following through with what she says. And she kind of stuck with it because people from anywhere else can take those tours. One time we did a tour with an old folks home in, I think it was like Detroit or something, like just sitting in their chairs and they're all super comfy. And then we were just on the screen and we take the phone around and like zoom in on plants and like show them that.
She did talk about curriculum in schools having changed. Do you remember when you were in high school, like what you learned about Indigenous peoples in Canada? Because you and I, like, we went to high school around the same time, like the turn of the century. Mm-hmm. Is that what 1999, 2000 would be? Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking, too, of, like, climate education, too. And we didn't really learn much about that at all. But, I mean, growing up in BC, we would learn about the different nations kind of in our area and on the coast a little bit. But in kind of a rosy, glossed over context that didn't really get into the kind of nasty parts of the history, mm-hmm. which are pretty important and should be discussed. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like I learned about the fur trade. The fur trade is what stands out to me. Embarrassingly, like I'm like kind of ashamed, but also just like speaking on truth. I didn't learn about residential schools until I was in my first year at university and I took an English course. And I don't know, I just feel like in the last 10 years, that's when there's been a lot more mainstream exposure. Like Indigenous people have always known their own history, but...
What about this? We were in school when residential schools were still open.
I know.
That's pretty wild, yeah.
Yeah, such an important thing to acknowledge. Like plenty of people have the perspective that it was a long time ago when it wasn't. Mm-hmm. It's good to remember that because truth has to come first before mm-hmm. any hope of reconciliation, I think.
Stories like Shay's give me some hope that education is changing a little bit and this sort of knowledge and land-based sharing of knowledge can spread.
For youth, we do a lot of school tours. And we get mostly local schools, so like Vancouver, Burnaby, New West, even some from like Maple Ridge and Langley. And we get some tours from students further away, like the Sunshine Coast. We had a group from Banff once, and that was really cool. I will say to the youth in the Vancouver area that it's cool to learn and to listen. Like, you know, maybe I was the same in high school, but the way that they act on the tour, it's like it's not cool to learn and it's not cool to care about the Indigenous or the environment. It is cool and it's really important. And I guess I would say, like, don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to actually be interested in the tour and what we're saying. And to look up things outside of the tour if something caught your attention. I will say that the students that we get from outside of the Vancouver area, I guess it's more remote. There's more plants around them in general. They are always super interested and excited to learn. And they see this plant all the time outside of their school. And I tell them what it is. And now they know what it is. And they get super excited about that. So I would say don't be afraid to learn and to listen and to be interested and ask questions.
I really enjoyed hearing from Shay about the tourism provided with Talese and this opportunity for a more meaningful sort of experience in the tourism industry, reclaiming and sharing traditional knowledge and kind of widening this idea of people getting in touch with nature. Mm. As we think about different ways to move towards reconciliation, I felt like this opportunity was really appropriate.
Yeah, thinking about learning about connection to land and water directly from Indigenous folks. I think that's important.
And for people visiting town, I'm always trying to think of what would be cool for people to see or for people to check out. And I know I always think of nature, go on a hike, go on a bike ride, that sort of thing. But I am definitely going to suggest Talese tours after this interview.
Like, there's lots of beautiful nature close to Vancouver, but sometimes it can be a bit harder to access. So it's nice that they're offering this tour, this ecotourism, right in the heart of the city.
Mm-hmm. And Stanley Park is so beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful places around this part of the province. And it's cool to be able to get to experience it with a little bit of background, a little bit of knowledge from those who know the land best.
Yeah, the local peoples.
Mm-hmm.
I think that traveling other places and seeing other things and, I mean, other landscapes, first of all, like natural things, but also like meeting other people from different cultures. And I think that's so enriching. And I feel like traveling is something that I credit to having a more open mind, but it comes at a cost, traditionally.
Yeah, if we go back to just like strengthening our relationship to nature by just being in it, just kind of bolsters that connection you have with the land.
Do you have a place in BC, like a favorite natural place of beauty?
I'm a big forest and mountain kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy mountain biking and hiking and camping out in the forests. I really like the interior where it's a little bit drier and warmer in the summer. And just kind of growing up in those forests, that's what draws me for sure.
So you feel like connected to the place that you began, if you will?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I can relate to that for sure. I do like being in the forests here. It feels like home. Like every year when it turns to fall and there's just like more rain, like I kind of love being in the forest then, because then it's like the rivers are really flowing and they just seem really lush and rich.
Growing up, there was like a mountain biking area near Kelowna, which was kind of one of the best in the province. And we'd spend a lot of time out there. And in 2003, the big forest fires out there burnt the whole thing down. So just literally kind of an effect of climate change took away an area that we would spend a lot of time in.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of like a direct example of
impacts.
Yeah, direct impact. But I think there is a deeper thing of just having a connection to the land, regardless of direct impacts, just having that kind of indirect enjoyment of nature in general. Whether consciously or not, it just kind of deepens that relationship, which makes you have a little bit more concern and awareness for conservation.
Oh, that's an interesting thought, that like what goes on subconsciously when we're in nature that we don't even know about. And I'm just thinking about how like spending time in nature, even unconsciously, it kind of slows you down, especially if you live in a busy city. There's like hustle and bustle all the time. Like the city never really sleeps.
Both of us enjoy camping and just even the first day being away from the city just automatically kind of resets things a bit and just relaxes everything. And that brings me to this idea of forest bathing, which is kind of along with that. Just spending time in the forest is kind of a relaxing and cleansing experience. And I feel like maybe that's like a Japanese term, but that has real effects on our well-being and our connection to nature. And I know that Talese Tour offers that as one of their experiences is the idea of forest bathing, which I thought was really cool.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. It's just that you don't necessarily need a destination. It's just the being out there that can be therapeutic sometimes.
Yeah.
The few things that she said, that Shay says in this talk, just kind of like feel really uplifting. Like that's a way we can look at the world, and that makes sense. And I really could see some of these points just becoming more of the norm and less of like novel ideas.
Mm-hmm. That wraps it up for today, folks. Thanks for joining us on the Down to You podcast.
And thanks to Shay for being here and sharing your story with the Down to You podcast. And we'll be back next time where we're going to talk about embracing the power of nature.
Embracing the power of nature. Yeah. Can't wait to talk about it. See you then.
See you next time. Have a great week. On this journey through BC, we've met some incredible youth with some amazing stories about things they're doing. It's been really inspiring seeing this generation take initiative on ecological and environmental issues. The Down to You podcast wouldn't be possible without our wonderful production team and funders. From the Fraser Basin Council Youth Program, we have Sonia Dodig, Hollis Nelson, Nicole Gonzalez-Filos, and Lindsay Sackett. Also, a big thanks to our collaborators, Vedluna Studio, Pendimental Sound Production, ZG Stories, and Maya Lazar-Mulabdic for her beautiful illustrations. This project was undertaken with the financial support of the Government of Canada through the Federal Department of Environment and Climate Change. Thank you, everyone, for listening.